Welcome to the NSCA Coaching Podcast, Season 9, Episode 23.
There's so much research on what the physical and stress demands are of these jobs. So do the research also and show up to your first interview knowing without a shadow of a doubt what you're working with. Because I think that's where you can kind of get picked apart is if you're like, oh, I've just worked with like athletes. And I think the athlete is similar in this way. I think you should go into your interview like, hey, I've done the research. I understand this is what I'm working with. I understand these are some things that I might see in this role. And here's what I plan to do to kind of help that. And I think those are ways to really help you get a job in the space if that's kind of what you're looking for.
This is the NSCA's Coaching Podcast, where we talk to strength and conditioning coaches about what you really need to know but probably didn't learn in school. There's strength and conditioning, and then there's everything else.
This is the NSCA Coaching Podcast. Hey, everyone, I'm your host, Eric McMahon, NSCA's Coaching and Sports Science Program Manager, and today we're diving into one of the most rewarding and rapidly growing corners of our field, tactical strength and conditioning. If you're a coach looking to transition from sport into working with military, law enforcement, firefighters, or other first responders, or if you've already been working in the tactical space and you want to level up, this episode is for you. We're joined today by a new member of our team here at the NSCA headquarters, Whitney Trammell. She's our tactical program manager. Whitney, welcome.
I'm glad to be here. I feel like I've always listened to the coaching podcast, so I'm officially on it now.
Yeah, you're a big deal now. This is awesome. Excited to learn about your background. Why don't you just dive in? Tell us a little bit about your journey.
Yeah. So, man, it's like, yeah, we could go really long or we could keep it really short. I'll try to go long story short as much as I can. Funny enough, I started, Eric, I don't know if I ever told you this. I started in undergrad as a political science pre-law major. Quickly realized that was not what I wanted to do. I went to my TCU for my undergrad and, was pre-major, figured out I like sports. I like science, exercise science makes sense. So that's what I ended up doing. I got my degree in exercise science, thought I wanted to be a physical therapist, actually worked in a physical therapist clinic, for about a year after undergrad and was not having the time of my life. And so, had a professor in undergrad, Dr. Oliver, who recommended strength and conditioning, got my CSCS, came to Colorado for my master's, which is where I met Jay Dawes. And if you're unfamiliar with Jay Dawes, he's a legend within the NSCA, but also in the tactical space. A lot of his research is in that space. And so I came in like a guinea pig saying, you know, I'm really open to whatever opportunities are here. You know, I just know that I have to have my master's to get those opportunities. And so he recommended an internship with 10th Special Forces Group, which was kind of my first exposure to the tactical population. And I'll briefly mention my dad was a DEA agent and he passed when I was younger. And so it was kind of cool to recognize I can make that tie of working with the tactical population in a way. And so one thing led to another. I did a couple internships, as all coaches do, and then got into coaching in the tactical space. I spent time working with police, military, and fire, mostly with military, but I've definitely covered my bases there. And then now I've moved more into the education space, not just in this program manager position, but I've been working on my PhD. And so my research there is in stress and stress physiology and just examining high stress tests and environments that tactical personnel might find themselves in.
I mean, that it's really interesting to hear your background. Obviously, you know, you mentioned your dad, you have a personal connection to the tactical mm-hmm. space and you grew up with it. And now it's something you get to do every day. Mm-hmm. You're getting your PhD. You're working here at the NSCA. You really get to pour into the tactical field. And you've been very involved with the NSCA mm-hmm. really your entire career. That's really one of the unique benefits of going to school here in Colorado Springs, getting to know Jay. He's been a member of our board. He's an active member of the NSCA. Anyone here at the headquarters know Jay does really well. So what are some of the big topics you're seeing in the tactical space right now?
Yeah, I mean, I think the first thing that comes to mind is like topics and maybe not SNC related is just the contracting stuff and everything that's going on with that. But, you know, if I do look more at the performance side of things, I think holistic health is becoming really big. And I really think that special operations piloted that and brought that to light. They had, it was called Thor at the time, it's just referenced as POTIF now. And they had teams working within special operations units that had strength coaches, dietitians, physical therapists, athletic trainers, mental performance specialists, you name it. If you're a professional in the human performance field, you're working with these groups. And so I really think that they piloted that. Yeah, I think over 10 years ago is maybe when all of that started. And then slowly but surely, that has expanded into big army. It's expanded into other branches of the military. It's expanded into police and a fire. And I think what we can take away from that is that it's not just being bigger, faster, stronger. It's not just keeping our nutrition in check. It's not just making sure we're injury free. Like, we have to put all of those things together. And how do those things all work together also for the individual that you're working with. So I think holistic health sounds trendy outside of even the tactical space, but I try to think of it more as like longevity. Like, if we're looking at the whole piece, the whole human, the whole individual, how long can these people stay in their careers? Versus if we just look at how strong they are and we don't care about anything else, that's not really beneficial to longevity in their careers. So I'd say that's probably a big thing. And maybe I'm just more involved in it because that's just my personal interest. But I do think it's becoming more and more recognizable that that's very important.
Yeah, tactical work in the tactical space isn't narrow.
No.
There's a lot of duties, responsibilities that you have to go through on a daily basis, and you're on call all the time. You've worked with military, you've worked in the public safety space. Do you see those as similar? Are there a lot of differences there? Where are you at with that?
Yeah, good question. You know, I think as far as if I'm looking at like physical demands of the job, people might think that police officers are more sedentary now. If you think about those in the military, if they're not deployed or they're not TDY, they're also sitting in an office. And so I like to think that it's all similar. I'm definitely not going to say they're all the same. But I also think if we're looking at a well-rounded individual who needs to be able to call on different training qualities at any given point in their career, they're all going to be similar. We need some aerobic endurance, we need anaerobic endurance, we need strength, we need a power, we need to be able to move well. All of those things that we look at, they're all important, and there's really not one that's more important than the other. So when we look at our training for police, military, fire, we need to have all of those things in our training. And yes, maybe there are times throughout the year you can focus more on one than the other. But I think we're really doing the people we're working with a disservice if we only choose to focus on one at a time. You have your police officer that, yeah, might be at a desk or just sitting in his cop car all day. But when he needs to chase after someone, he needs to chase after someone. And he doesn't know when that time's going to come. So he needs to be ready to do that at any moment. And so are they all the same? No. But are they similar? Do they require similar training qualities? I would say yes.
What about some of the stressors in the space? Where do you see that falling in terms of, we hear a lot about mental stress in the tactical space.
Yeah, I love stress. I'm so glad you asked. I think stressors are, I'd say stress are more different, right? So I think the benefit to maybe someone in the military is they can deploy and all of that stress is maybe where they're deployed and they can at least come home. And I've heard that talked about a lot, is I can just like leave that stress there or leave what happened there, leave that trauma there. Police officers and firefighters, unfortunately, it could be like right around the corner from where they live, where they experience something that was maybe stressful or traumatic, or you include shift work in that. You have firefighters who work 24, 48, 72-hour shifts. You have police officers who do the same thing. You have those in the military who are getting there at 6 a.m. and they're not getting home until 8 o'clock at night because they're on the range all day. So, we think about the maybe traumatic experiences that they might have, but there's also so many additional stressors that the job requires, whether or not they have a traumatic experience that I just listed. So, I think just recognizing that these are very high stress jobs, and even if physically they're not doing anything for a little bit, the mental stress that it places on them will affect the physical demands of their job that they have to do.
Yeah, what I'm hearing is the weight's not always on the bar in these professions. And I think that's one of those phrases we hear in the tactical space that really brings you to, well, the need for physical fitness and health and wellness is to overcome these demands. You're on call all the time. It's incredibly challenging to be called on like that under pressure, under stress, right in your backyard, as you said, in the public safety space. And I didn't really think about it like that before. These aren't areas that we talk about in strength and conditioning too often. Do you feel like coaches, you've been that coach working in the tactical space, do you feel like we're well prepared to handle those challenges?
Absolutely not. I mean, we don't, maybe, like maybe you took a sports psych class in your undergrad or your master's. I took one sports psych class in my undergrad, one sports psych class in my master's, but I'm not even going to say that prepared me to work with mental health things, right? You know, as a coach, you have the both, as an incredible thing, but also if you're not really prepared for it, it might not feel incredible in the moment. It's the luxury of, you have maybe the most contact points with this individual other than their family, right? And so this person's going to get the team, the person, whomever is going to get really comfortable with you. And that's a good thing, especially if they trust you and they trust what you're doing. And eventually they're going to start opening up about life, about the job, about maybe traumas that they've experienced. And if you've never experienced anything yourself, if you don't never had those conversations with somebody, it's going to be really easy to kind of just like shut down and like not know what to do, or to try to over maybe empathize in a way that doesn't seem like it is empathizing. And so, man, this is a huge topic, like how do coaches prepare for that side of the tactical space? And you know, I don't necessarily have an answer for that right now. I do think, and I don't say this to like brag, I think maybe my upbringing, things that happened in my upbringing, you know, I experienced a lot of death growing up, and just other things where it was easier for me early on to relate. Or at least not even relate, but just be like, hey, I've been through some things. So like, if you're comfortable sharing with me, like I can kind of empathize. Whereas, you know, for someone who hasn't maybe been through some of those things, yeah, it might be a little bit tougher. So I think one thing I'd be super interested in and doing at some point is what can we do to better equip coaches for those situations where they are kind of having to be a mental health person when they didn't plan to.
Totally. We're not counselors, but often we get called on, even in sport. I mean,
For sure.
we're not the coaches controlling playing time. Well, we're not the people giving these soldiers orders or whatever the right analogy is. We're the outlet for them in the weight room, and the weight room can be a sanctuary for
Absolutely.
these soldiers, for these officers, whatever it may be. And so it's important that we know our role in those spaces, that you know what? They're not going to get a great training session if their head's not in it. How do we get them there? That's obviously what we want to do. We want to get them into a productive training session. That's why we show up for work every day. But there's a lot of things that come with that. And it's really interesting when you get into those, I always say, the other book chapters, you know, from the Essentials text or whatever, all these books. And it's one that I think it's important. We don't focus on those chapters during our studying a lot of times, but it is important that why they're there, why we need to know sports psychology or performance psychology, why we need to know nutrition to just to recognize a lot of these red flags.
Yeah, I think too, you mentioned like, you know, maybe if their like mental health or mental state isn't in a good place, they might not have a good training session. But what I love doing, and it's my favorite thing to hear, and I would do this all the time when I was with 10th group, is, you know, guys would come in and maybe they're just chatting and they'd hop on the bike to warm up. And then I end up just chatting with them and an hour has gone by and they're still on the bike and they're like, Coach, you took my training session away. And I'm like, you probably needed that. Like, I didn't take your training session away. That was very purposeful, and I had intent in doing that. And I was really just seeing how long you were willing to sit here and talk to me. And so I think, especially in that environment, you know, those are very high performing individuals. Oftentimes, the goal, and this goes to police and fire too, this can happen in those settings too. Oftentimes, the goal is to get them to take a step back. Like, they're on the range all day, they're trying to get 2-a-days in, they're usually training for some other competition outside of work too. So how can I actually get you to dial it back? And teaching them to do that and to slow down a little bit is like rewarding for me. I know they don't always like it, but I always love when I catch them and they're like, Coach, you took an hour of my training time. And I'm like, good, love that.
Well, I've never heard the term 2-a-days outside of college football, so here we are in tactical talking about 2-a-days. Want to ask you about your new job, your new role. How are you enjoying it? What are some of the big things you're working on?
Yeah, well, yeah, good question. You always want to come into a new job with whether it's like a 1 year goal, 3 year goal, all of these things. And I'll say to start out, it's been good. I get to work with amazing coaches like you and Blake and Kevin in there. And I think just to be able to bounce ideas off of you guys is really good too. You kind of asked like, what are some plans I have in mind? I think I've been very narrow focused early on the conference and just like getting all of that figured out. And so, I think a goal for mine, whether it plays out this year and following years for the conference, is just to create one that really has meaningful impact and one where people feel like they can come to connect. So I'm really trying to increase opportunities for connections at the conference. So that's a big goal of mine. I really want to help grow the public side of things, and nothing against anyone who's held this role before me, but military is the pride and joy of the tactical program, and I absolutely agree with that. But I do think the fire and police side is growing quite a bit. So,
Just to
but
jump in, what does that look like for you? How do we do that?
yeah, for sure. I think I was just talking to Rob Orr the other day. What are some like police officer conferences I can go to? What are some firefighter conferences I can go to? Who should I be in the room with talking to try to get them to know and understand like the TSAC-F should be the standard. Like police and fire departments have peer fitness tests. They have fitness type individuals on their departments. But the TSAC-F should be the standard for that, in my opinion. So that's definitely not something that happens in a day. Like it might take a couple years to really get that going. And I can get it going soon, but to actually have that implemented might take a couple years. So yeah, I'd love to have the TSAC-F be like the standard for police and fire departments, and to have at least one TSAC-F on all departments, I think would be super cool and helpful. And then I think, yeah, just the growth of the TSAC course too. And kind of like I mentioned, how that should be kind of like a minimum standard, not just having the certification, but going through that course so you get that hands-on experience too. And yeah, so I think obviously I have spent most of my career in the military side of things, but I do really want to grow the public safety side of things. And I'm sure I'll have a million ideas as time goes. I also always tell everyone, I think I've said this to you and Scott multiple times, I have like anyone that I've talked to since I've had the job, whether it's a friend or someone who reached out or whatever, I'm just like, if you have ideas for how this program can be better, like give them to me, share them with me, because I'm not generally a good idea fairy, but I am a good executor. So, like, if you're listening to this, you're interested in tactical or you're in the tactical space and you have ideas, but like possibly how this program can grow, how it can be better, where it can be more impactful, please reach out to me and let me know. And like, let's see how we can make those things happen.
Yeah, I like it. To your point, NSCA isn't just the CSCS. We have five certification programs, TSAC-F being one of them. We both carry that credential. To someone out there who is just learning about the TSAC-F, who should be going to get this credential?
Yeah, I mean, good question. I think it is, the qualifications are different. You just have to have a high school certificate or your GED to sit for this. I do think while it is not a requirement for strength and conditioning coaches to have to get jobs in the tactical space, I do think if you're wanting to make the switch from college tactical, from high school, from whatever, from something different, and you want to get into the tactical space, I do think it's still valuable to sit for that exam and get that certification, simply just as the first step into learning, the first step into showing that you care what the demands of their job look like. Is it required? No. Do you have to? No. Do I think that it shows that you care and are making efforts towards learning? Absolutely. Secondary to that, it's police officers, firefighters, military personnel, service members who want to bring physical fitness, strength and conditioning, human performance to their department, to their unit, and essentially be a force multiplier. And just be able, by no means are you a subject matter expert at the end of getting the certification, but you are hopefully well versed enough to know maybe someone that you can refer out to, or somewhere that you can look online to help get resources, or somewhere that you can look within the NSCA to get resources. And yeah, so I think, and most of the people who hold their TSEC-F are probably are police, military, fire. It is kind of,
Okay.
it can really be a force multiplier type certification. But like I said, I do think it helps coaches looking to get into the space to just so show that you're learning about what they do.
Yeah, we've said it's kind of a bookend credential. People with their degrees, with their CSCS, go and get it to show competence or expertise in the tactical space or to make that transition, like you mentioned. Those coming in from the police, fire, public safety side of things, probably most often, also in the military, but aren't in the fitness profession. They have another career. It still can elevate their profession, maybe give them an opportunity to be sort of the fitness captain for their group. And that's one of the cool things about the TSEC-F is that it serves multiple populations and kind of a hidden gem within the NSCA for those looking to learn tactical. We have a textbook for it. We have courses for it. Tons of resources like we do for all of our programs here at the NSCA. So I'm really glad you mentioned it. We've talked about the pathway a little bit into tactical. Let's go deeper on that. What advice do you have for someone who wants to be a tactical strength and conditioning coach? What do they need to know about the tactical athlete? What did you learn during your early career stages?
Yeah, good question. You know, like I said, fortunately, I was just kind of thrown into it early on. And that was just simply knowing the right people. And I say this whether you want to be in tactical or any strength and conditioning space, it's oftentimes who you know. And I can give credit to someone else for every job I've ever held. Like I've never applied to a job just like cold application, not knowing anyone there or not knowing someone who knows someone. I just don't think I'll ever get a response if I do that. So I've always at least known someone or knew someone who knew someone when I was looking at jobs and even outside of the tactical space. So why I say that is go to the conferences, go to the tactical annual training, go, and even if you don't have your TSEC-F certification, even if you've never worked with a tactical population, go work and or go attend it and meet people. There's so many professionals there in the field. Go talk to the speakers. Most people are willing to talk. You know, I'm a social butterfly, so I can't speak for everyone, but anyone that I've ever just, I don't know them, I've tapped on the shoulder and just wanted to hold a conversation. I've never gotten turned down from a conversation at any conference I've ever been to. And so I think that speaks really highly to the people that are coming to the NSCA conferences. Generally, they're always willing to help. So I'd say part one, go to conferences, put yourself in positions to meet people. If you have a state or a regional event and you recognize someone speaking from the tactical space, go attend that. Go introduce yourself to them. I think meeting people is huge. Outside of that, you know, I think it's doing the research. Even if you don't get your TSEC-F certification, maybe just get the textbook to read and see what are the demands of these individuals. Understand what are there's so much research. Obviously, I'm a research nerd, but like there's so much research on what the physical and stress demands are of these jobs. So do the research also and show up to your first interview knowing without a shadow of a doubt what you're working with. Because I think that's where you can kind of get picked apart is if you're like, oh, I've just worked with like athletes and I think the athlete is similar in this way. I think you should go into your interview like, hey, I've done the research. I understand this is what I'm working with. I understand these are some things that I might see in this role. And here's what I plan to do to kind of help that. And I think those are ways to really help you get a job in the space if that's kind of what you're looking for.
It's great advice. Seek conversations in the field in the direction you want to go in your career. Show up at the events. Tactical annual training is a big one coming up every year. I know you're working really hard on that right now to get the speaker lineup on the website and up for everybody. For those who want to continue this conversation after the episode, why don't you share your NSCA email with us and we'll put it in the show notes.
Yeah, you can find me at whitney.trammell. That's TRAM as in Mike, EL at NSCA.com. And more than glad to connect, hop on a call. I feel like that's been a lot of my job this first month is hopping on calls, connecting with people. And I love that. I can talk to anyone. So if you have questions, if you just want to connect, if you're curious maybe how I can help or you want to pick my brain or how the NSCA can maybe help with what you're doing, shoot me an email and let's hop on a call and we can talk about that.
That's perfect. Thank you to Whitney Really appreciate you coming on. Excited to have you on our team here at the NSCA. And I know the tactical field and all the coaches out there are really excited to have you on board with us. So thank you.
I'm stoked to be here.
To meet more tactical coaches, NSCA Tactical Annual Training is right around the corner in August. Keep an eye out for NSCA emails and social media on that and other NSCA events. Thanks for listening. And to our sponsor, Soranex Exercise Equipment, we appreciate their support.
Hey, this is Nick Barringer. I want to tell everybody to go to the Tactical Annual Event for the NSCA. It's an amazing event with amazing speakers. You do not want to miss it. Since I have been going, I always leave with a new nugget of wisdom. Go check it out.
This was the NSCA's Coaching Podcast. The National Strength and Conditioning Association was founded in 1978 by strength and conditioning coaches to share information, resources, and help advance the profession. Serving coaches for over 40 years, the NSCA is the trusted source for strength and conditioning professionals. Be sure to join us next time.